Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one micro-podcast per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Ninjas and Super Spies, the ridiculous RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the previous week's episodes in one megasode, like this one. If you want to follow along at home, we are reading Revised Ninjas and Super Spies, 7th printing, from the year 2000. Today we're discussing page 49 of Ninjas and Super Spies. This is the beginning of the espionage agents character classes. These are the true spies, not just people who happen to work for a spy agency, but people who were homegrown, trained by a spy agency, continue to work there, have tons of funding, no expense has been spared. And the first two character classes we get are the cyber agent and the wired agent. Now, I'm going to pretend that the wired agent doesn't exist, because as is often going to be the case throughout this section, we've basically got two identical character classes on the same page, just padding out the game. The wired agent is just the cyber agent, only the cybernetics aren't as good, and the wired agent gets a martial art form. So, screw the wired agent. I want to talk about the cyber agent, and specifically, I want to talk about the cyber agent pictured on this page, in the bottom right-hand corner. This is an illustration you can find on the Instagram, but for those of you who don't have it in front of you, let me describe what I'm seeing. This is a gentleman with the angular haircut to which we've become accustomed in this book. He has a manic, rage-contorted look on his face. He looks like a terrorist played by Gary Busey in a movie from the 80s, or indeed like real-life Gary Busey. He has a gun in one hand, pointed weirdly off to the side, a grenade in the other hand. I don't know how he plans on pulling that pin. And in the middle of a face, which is roughly half mouth and half forehead, two bulging mechanical eyes. You can see the whole spherical shape of these eyes. Like, they are literally bugging out of his sockets. Now, these eyes may have night vision. They may be cameras. They may have laser emitters hidden inside them. Certainly, there is room for all that and more inside these spacious, luxurious eyes. What these eyes cannot possibly be good for is covert ops, which is, in fact, what the cyber agent is trained for. If you look over at the cyber agent's skill selection, they get three espionage skill programs. Now, each one of those comes with a cover identity. So what we're talking about here, because, again, remember, these are agents. These are characters who were trained by spy agencies to do a specific task. Cyber agents have three different cover identities, all backed by their spy agency, to give them the ability to operate in a variety of undercover scenarios. Cyber agents are heavily invested in undercover work. But their other big niche is that they've got all these cybernetics, which, here's the thing about those. And I want to tread carefully here because I don't want to accidentally say something kind of negative about people with disabilities. I think it's actually really cool that the cybernetics in this game give you the ability to play a character who is meaningfully disabled, who is neither limited and removed from the story because they have a physical disability, nor do the game's kind of cool powers come in to save the day and make it so that it doesn't matter at all that the character is disabled. Cybernetics are more like prosthetics than they are like the mechanical version of superpowers as they are in Heroes Unlimited. So it's meaningful that a character is missing an arm, even if they have a cybernetic arm. But the result of that is a little weird for a game with Super Spy in the title, because cybernetics fall into two categories. One is the kind that looks like a biological human body part, except it's not as good. And the second is a body part that performs at least some of the functions of that body part better than a biological body part, but looks obviously artificial. This is certainly the case with the eye, where you have to choose between having an eye that looks like an eye and an eye that can see like an eye. There is no eye in the game that does both. Obviously, Bug Eyes here has opted for being able to see. He has two bulging robot eyes, which means he has depth perception, but he is paying a heavy price in looking like the kind of maniac you see in a Denny's yelling at waitresses and going in and out of the bathroom a lot. The expression on his face isn't helping, but those eyes alone would make him look like a dangerous lunatic, and that is not conducive to leading three separate secret lives, or evading the notice of guards and law enforcement. This is not the sort of modification you give to a spy for doing a good job. This is not like, congratulations, you're spy of the month, you get a weekend at the spa, and we're going to pluck out your eyes and replace them with big cold lenses so you look like Johnny Five. I don't want to go on at too much more length here because we're going to be covering cybernetics later and there's plenty to say about them in their own section. But this picture is definitely the dumbest thing on this page, not only because it's a bad picture, but because it really sheds light on just how bad the whole cyber agent idea is. Almost all of the signature cybernetics, like the major cyber attachments that a cyber agent or wired agent could have, make you a non-starter as the kind of spy this game envisions. This is a character class that teaches you a bunch of skills, then gives you robot parts that makes you inherently bad at those skills. And that, as illustrated by this candid portrait of Squarehead McEyeballs, is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 50 of Ninjas and Super Spies. It's a special occasion, and it is appropriate upon this momentous day that Ninjas and Super Spies gets to do what it does best, and that is fail me. For upon this page we find the two remaining espionage character classes, the operative agent and the gadgeteer agent. The operative agent is probably the most boring class in the game. It gets skills in a martial arts form and none of the special perks other classes get, and that's it. The other class on this page, the gadgeteer agent, is also boring, and to make a long story short, that's the dumbest thing on this page. But I feel I have to defend this pick, and I have to defend it in a shocking turn of events with recourse to another Palladium book, because I have certain expectations of what Palladium will deliver to me with something like a gadget-obsessed super spy, and the gadgeteer agent is not it. So, for your consideration, I present the case against the gadgeteer agent. I present to you from the special training section of Heroes Unlimited. This is a role-playing game about aliens and robots, cyborgs, people with magical swords, people in one memorable instance with magical underwear, which is a great magical item to have because it's not easily pried off of you in the heat of battle. Special training is the superhero category for superheroes who have none of those traditional superhero trappings. They're just people who have somehow found themselves in a group of... It's like if Dirty Harry ended up on the Justice League somehow. Could easily have been the most boring part of the book, but it's not. Exhibit A, the Ancient Master. This is Heroes Unlimited's answer to Ninjas and Super Spies. This is the ancient martial artist. This gives you a bunch of like high level weapon proficiencies and all kinds of crazy stuff. You get to build an arsenal of ninja weapons. So you get to like go select your 12 favorite from like this illustrated list of all the martial arts weapons through history. There's even a table to roll to see how old you look compared to how old you really are, which has a teeny bit of overlap so that it can turn out if you roll badly that you're like a hard living ancient master who's actually 40 but looks 50. Or if you roll really well, then you're actually 90 but you look 20. Exhibit B, the hunter slash vigilante. Never mind that all of the characters in this game are vigilantes. This is a superhero or supervillain who hunts the most dangerous game, man. You wouldn't think that there's very much distinctive that we could give to this character, since, as we've established, the Palladium skill system is exhaustive in its coverage of, like, weird outdoorsy physical and rifle-firing skills. But, in fact, they do scrape up some original stuff to give this character. He has an ability to disguise scent, whereas his ability to recognize and identify plants is at 86%, slightly better. He has a 90% chance to modify weapon cartridges, so all this stuff to make him, like, distinctively a hunter. The secret operative, the super spy of Heroes Unlimited. I don't even begin to have time to explain to you all the cool crap that this character gets to make up for the fact that he has no superpowers. He gets a billion skills. He gets bonuses to all of his attributes. He gets a special car. When you're creating a super spy in Heroes Unlimited, you can very easily end up in a situation where you're weighing your options between your vehicle being a car that can drive on water or one that has a rocket-powered ejector seat. That's a good day at the office in character creation when you're making a decision like that. There's so much cool stuff. He gets laser weapons, the stage magician, a whole character class just for what if David Copperfield decided to go fight crime. And it's got a list of like all the smoke bombs you can get. There's something called like goblin dust that you can blow in people's faces. These are all characters with no special superhero gimmick, but each one of them has some crime fighting ability that is totally unique to that class. So now we return to Ninjas and Super Spies. Beneath a picture of a woman with a jetpack, a rare depiction of a woman doing any kind of like espionage or crime fighting in this game, we have the gadgeteer agent. And I quote, "This character is in love with gimmicks and devices. Without a complete selection of dirty tricks, weapons, secret gizmos, and special defenses, the character would feel downright naked." So this is a classic super spy archetype. This is your mid-era James Bond, who relies a lot on like laser wristwatches and gimmick shoes that allow you to fight off sharks, like weirdly specific gadgets that you get at the beginning of the movie and then they end up being useful to fight the bad guys later. That kind of character, right? A major super spy archetype. And what does the Gadgeteer agent get to reflect this, you may ask? The answer is $250,000. And that's it. There are no special gizmo abilities. There's no, like, special hookup. Like, not only can you not make a laser watch, you don't even know a guy who can make a laser watch. You just get $250,000 to go shop. You're just stuck buying the same shit everybody else can get. And in fact, it's not even gonna end up with you having like this, you know, big backpack full of wacky gadgets, as it would, for example, if you were the Ancient Master from Heroes Unlimited, who actually has to go pick out like 15 badass ancient weapons. You can't cash them in for their cash equivalent. You can't have an arsenal that is just like a briefcase full of $100 bills. You actually have to go pick cool weapons from a cool list of weapons. Here, it's just money. And oftentimes, agents who work for an agency do have like an allowance, right? You've got like your gun allowance. So if every mission you somehow manage to drop your company issued weapon, if you're a real Fox Mulder and every time you have a confrontation with a bad guy, you somehow trip over something and drop your gun and have to go with hat in hand back to the agency and get that same model of gun to go drop again next week, then certainly you're not going to blow your $250,000, which I remind you is your primary class feature, $250,000. You're not going to blow it on a closet full of those little guns. You just get those. What you're going to do is buy one or two big ticket items. For example, you could buy a laser pistol. Costs like $180,000, which is basically your whole budget, but you now have a laser pistol. And so your super spy career is going to be like a Roger Moore, James Bond movie where you're constantly getting into tight scrapes and then you have just the right gadget. Only in this case, it's always your laser pistol. For what it's worth, the operative agent on the other side of the page is even worse. It's almost identical to this class, except it doesn't get the money. Instead, it gets like two more skill programs. And they're basic skill programs too. So like, you get just as many spy skills as other people, and then you get like two skill program selections from, you know, the basic category or the medical category. So if you want to be a paramedic on top of everything, you can be that. Or, you know, basic skills. Like, if you want to go take the Weeaboo skill package, then you can be a super spy who can also, you know, name six types of Pocky. Or be an insufferable prick who wanders around the house in one of those like kimonos, like Brad in Rocky Horror. You can be a pompous jerk, in addition to being a spy. It is a terrible, terrible class. The money's not good, but I would much rather have the money. But at least the operative agent, the sort of overeducated know-it-all like Mycroft Holmes is like a boring character type implemented boringly. The Gadgeteer agent is disappointing. I don't expect good rules from Palladium. I don't expect good implementations. I don't expect sentences that function grammatically. I don't expect good organization. I don't expect a playable game, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I do expect crazy fun ideas, like the ones I mentioned earlier from Heroes Unlimited. And in that context, it is unconscionable that on page 50 of this book, right under a picture of a beautiful gadgeteer soaring through the sky in her jetpack, we have the cartooniest of super spy archetypes modeled as a character with no special quirks or abilities. And here's $250,000 to buy yourself something pretty. I'm not even mad. I'm disappointed. And the Gadgeteer agent is both the most disappointing and the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 51 of Ninjas and Super Spies. This page describes the Private Eye occupational character class. And I'm just going to say it. This page is fucking great. I love the PI in this game. It's the coolest. When I was a kid, and I used to play role-playing games with my dad, he played a PI. I thought that was pretty cool. I had a lot of fun. It definitely inspired my love of gaming moving forward. But I don't think it's all nostalgia. This class, incidentally, is not the one he played. He played the PI from Heroes Unlimited, the other awful Palladium RPG. This class really scratches all the itches for me. First of all, you get your own agency. This game has rules for creating spy agencies, which we'll get into later, and also martial arts schools, any kind of organization. The PI gets his own. He's a business owner. It's cool. He gets a really good skill selection, really good skill bonuses. Basically, he's somebody who's got some kind of espionage or military or law enforcement background, but who decided to go independent. And so he's got a lot of skills. He's sort of a maverick, but now he's on his own and has to pay his own bills. He doesn't have the legal authority. A classic trope, one that's great for ninjas and super spies. And that actually plays to the strengths of this game, which has a million varied skills, an emphasis on investigation that involves a lot of fisticuffs, and enough tracking of money to make it a significant drawback that, like, you may be smarter than the detectives at the agency, but they've got money and backing and you don't. Everything kind of comes together for the Private Eye. It's a cool page. I even like the picture of the Private Eye. His hat is casting a shadow over his eyes, as God intended. To find something dumb on this page, I've had to resort to something I've been saving throughout the other occupational character classes, which is the starting age. Each occupational character class lists a starting age. For some of the occupational character classes, the age is quite low, and then increases a bit with your martial arts styles, which add to your age. So, for example, the dedicated martial artist starts at only age 12, but would actually enter play something more like age 17 or 18 on the low end because of the years spent learning martial arts. Now, I think there was a version of this game where skill programs were meant to add to your age, but they no longer do in the version that we see here. So what you get instead is that while the martial artists, if you're playing the Goober class, you may start as young as like 17 or 18. And that makes sense because you've done nothing but study martial arts in a monastery. The Private Eye, I mean, here's the description. The Private Eye is usually an individual who's had some experience in law enforcement, military, or espionage. Generally, the character found that while he enjoyed investigative work, he did not enjoy the people he had to work with, the rules, and or the restrictions forced upon him by the agency. Consequently, after a few years, sometimes a few months, of service, he left that particular outfit to start his own agency where he can be his own boss and follow his own conscience. Clearly an indication of, like, the hard-boiled character with skeletons in his closet, right? And the character gets a ton of skills. 2 general skill programs, 2 from espionage, 2 from military or gizmoteer. So those back up this life story. But his starting age is only 18, and he doesn't have a martial art form that drives that up. So it's very feasible to play a Private Eye who has a couple of years of university under his belt, army basic training, artillery training, he's an electrical engineer, he's a trained boxer, he's a collegiate wrestler, he's an acrobat in the circus, he's a bodybuilder. He was trained as a CIA assassin and deep cover agent. He's maintained 2 fully papered cover identities as an engineering consultant and a journalist for a tech magazine. He has friends and acquaintances and work histories and fake IDs in both of those jobs. And then decided to quit the CIA in celebration of his 18th birthday to start his own investigation agency. Which I guess is the dumbest thing on this page. Although, let's be honest, I would play the shit out of that character. Today we're discussing page 52 of Ninjas and Super Spies. We're going to be talking about the other free agent occupational character classes, other than the awesome Private Eye, whom I love. There are 3 on this page. The Professional Free Agent, the Wandering Free Agent, and the Thief. The Thief is pretty hokey, but it's a hokey archetype for sort of like spy martial arts crime movies, and it's fine. The Wandering Free Agent is sort of like the free agent who gets a martial art form and has seen the world. It's not a great class, but fair enough. The Professional Free Agent is a riddle wrapped in some bullshit. I'll read you the character description. The character has spent a lot of time independently studying the espionage world and selling her services to the highest bidder. Along the way, she's learned the advantages of concealing her identity and has even managed to install a couple of cyber disguise modifications. So, okay, this is in the category of freelance spies, and really all the description tells us is she's a freelance spy. So we gotta get into the mechanics. What does this character get? Sell me on the Professional Free Agent book. Well, she doesn't get a martial art form. She gets 2 cyber disguises. That's unusual. It's not unique, but it's unusual. She gets skill programs. Quite a few. Not more than the, professional agents who work for organizations, but like on their level. That's it. But oh, I do see something down here where I've highlighted it for being awful. Implant/cyber expense account. This is your budget for buying those 2 cyber disguises that you get. $50,000. You may be surprised to discover that if you go look up the price of cyber disguises, you'll find that $50,000 is not enough to buy 2 cyber disguises. In fact, it's only enough to buy 1 cyber disguise. That is to say, 1 specific cyber disguise. And it's a terrible one. I'm not going to spoil the 1 cyber disguise the professional free agent can afford, but oh man, is it the shits. I can't wait to talk about it. So let's take stock. This class is absolute garbage, much worse than the corresponding, agent occupational character classes. Its 1 selling point doesn't actually work because the character doesn't have enough money to buy the cybernetics that the game entitles him to. There's no real concept here, or so I thought, because I do go through the book first. I look at these pages to see like sort of what I'm going to talk about. And I stuck on this class because I'm like, what is going on here? What is this character? And I began to read between the lines, keeping in mind what garbage this character is. Listen again to the description of this free agent. The character has spent a lot of time independently studying the espionage world and selling her services to the highest bidder. Along the way, she's learned the advantages of concealing her identity and has even managed to install a couple of cyber disguise modifications. So here we have a character with no appreciable spy skills compared to others, who's just spent a lot of time sort of like reading the trades and putting herself out there. And with the money that she's made, she has invested in the cheapest possible disguise gadgets so that she can't be recognized again. Basically, this is a shitty, unqualified spy who advertises on the espionage version of Fiverr, looking for lucrative jobs to suck at, and then fade into the shadows with her shitty cyber disguise so that she doesn't get tracked down and killed for being bad at her job. She doesn't have a real spy job. She advertises unscrupulously to people who she tricks into hiring her. I mean, let's be honest. This character is awful. In a game called Ninjas and Super Spies, this character is neither. This character is a poser, a wannabe, an unscrupulous scammer selling an inferior product, herself, to unwitting employers. Do not buy a couch on Spy Craigslist from this woman. The professional free agent, the class for people who want to have no flavor and not be good at anything, is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 53 of Ninjas and Super Spies. Here is where we enter the Gizmeteer character classes, the Gizmeteer OCCs. There are three of these, and these are the characters who actually make gizmos as compared to the Gadgeteer, the so-called Gadgeteer we discussed a couple days back, who is supposedly in love with gadgets but really just has a lot of money to buy things from SpyMart. Now, the biggest problem with the Gizmeteers, who, full disclosure, are my favorite classes in the game, or at least were when I was young. A new challenger has appeared in my reread, which we'll talk about tomorrow. But the Gizmeteers were my favorite as a kid, and I think that the biggest problem with the classes really is the problem with how the Gizmeteer skills come together. But that's all background stuff. That's all about how the underlying system of making gizmos works. That's its own problem. If you black box that and you just say, okay, off to the side, we have a system for making gadgets, and now what are these classes as characters who interface with that system? They're mostly good. We've got three here. We've got the Dreamer, Gizmeteer, first of all. This is the character who has a super high IQ. You need an IQ 14, which means you have an IQ of 140 as the minimum to play this character. The single highest attribute requirement for a class in the game, I believe. This is like the eccentric wanderer who knows a little bit of everything, kind of like the savant. He knows a martial arts style. He has not a ton of Gizmeteer skill programs, but he has, you know, a few, as well as a smattering of other skills from all over the place. He's got a cool thing where he has a, rather than like you have X percent chance to know about political figures or you have X percent chance to know about famous people in your field, he has a small percentage chance to find someone he knows anywhere in the world because of his many, many interests and the fact that he's been everywhere. Something that I actually criticized back when it was a background, because I think it's a dumb thing to have such a big family that, you know, you're in the middle of the Sahara and you go to an oasis and it's like, oh, I've got a 6% chance to have a cousin here. But I think it's cool when you've got a character like this who is like over the top eccentric. Like, this is Super Spy Kramer and it should be weird. You know, he should know people in strange places. So I like the Dreamer a lot. Over on the other side, the other extreme of these classes is the Tinker Gizmeteer, who's actually on the next page, but to briefly summarize, this is the serious-minded inventor. He has the most Gizmeteer skill programs, the highest bonus to his Gizmeteer roles. He is the least mad of these mad scientists. Then in the middle, you've got the Gizoid Gizmeteer. And it's not so much that I hate the Gizoid Gizmeteer as that there's a real missed opportunity here that is definitely the dumbest thing on this page. So if the Dreamer is like the natural, unfocused genius, and the Tinker is the serious-minded sort of professional inventor, the Gizoid is the cybernetics-focused Gizmeteer, the one who focuses on cybernetic implants and in fact has some. The Gizoid is also, interestingly, as the book tells us, the only character who officially changes cybernetics as he increases in level. So far, so good. We've got a character who's got some fun, he's got a good budget for cybernetics, he can get some fun stuff. He's not an espionage agent per se, so he doesn't have the problem of like the cyber agent or the wired agent. You know, he can have big mechanical bug eyes for all anybody cares. He's Q, not Bond. So it's not like he's got to be inconspicuous, right? But the level advancement bonus is the sticking point. And I quote, can replace one implant or cyber disguise at 4th, 8th, and 12th levels. Get a new additional implant or cyber disguise at 3rd, 6th, and 10th levels. Note that the character must find an agency or otherwise find a way to pay for these changes. While they are not free, they are automatically successful and the character does not have to roll for the surgery. So what we have here, and this is the story of the Gizmeteers all over, is a really cool concept. You've got a character who is both a cybernetics guy and an inventor, therefore, he gets additional cybernetics and can modify and upgrade his cybernetics as he levels up, as a class feature. That's really cool. If you look at what this level advancement actually allows him to do, it allows him to get cybernetics as he levels, provided that he can get access to them and pay for them. Which is like saying at 10th level, your character gets a new Mercedes, provided that there's a dealership nearby and he can afford one. You would think, being a super fan of cybernetics, and not only a super fan, but like a pro at cybernetics, a guy who actually makes cybernetics, that this character would have some special access, or maybe a discount because he can do some of it himself. Or maybe you could even go so far as to say that, you know, he's always tinkering. So in addition to the gizmos that he makes in game, every now and again, he just finds, you know, X amount of dollars worth of upgrades added to his stuff because he's been, you know, working on it during downtime. But instead, no, he straight up has to buy them just like everybody else. He does get one special benefit. This is the only thing that makes this character better at getting cybernetics as he levels up than other characters, which is that the surgery is automatically successful. Now, keep in mind that the character doesn't roll for this. The doctor does, the surgeon. And unlike arranging flowers or growing potatoes, plastic surgery is not actually that hard of a skill. So it's really the Gizoid's overwhelming enthusiasm for body modification, which somehow protects him from infection, that is his only substantial class benefit over other characters when it comes to cybernetics. So the only way for him to benefit from this is, you know, instead of going to one of those fancy high-priced surgeons, he can go head down to the local, you know, the cybernetics equivalent of the barber college and get a first level plastic surgeon to install the cybernetics, secure in the knowledge that his body is just so ready to have metal shit grafted onto it that even the most unqualified of surgeons cannot help but attach everything properly. The fact that the Gizoid's character class defining feature is the ability to buy goods at market value through the normal channels is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 54 of Ninjas and Super Spies. We're on to the mercenary character classes. These are the military characters who do not get title billing in Ninjas and Super Spies, but are nonetheless a big part of the character creation. The major categories we've seen so far, of course, are martial artists, worldly and goober, espionage agents, free agents, and gizmeteers. And now here we've arrived at the hardcore, gun-toting, helmet-wearing, jet-flying, jeep-riding, etc., etc. These are army guys. And the description of the overall category makes very clear to us that these are the manliest men in a crop of extremely manly men here in the character creation section. Allow me to quote an in-character passage entitled, "Why I Love Being a Mercenary OCC." Are we talking power here? Isn't that what this game is all about? If it's power you're interested in, then check out Mercenaries. Nah, we're not interested in the power to chop toothpicks with your bare hands, and all that spy gizmo stuff is pretty cute, but largely worthless. Ain't none of it can compare to the sheer raw power of a 50 caliber machine gun, or a grenade launcher, or the roar of a barrage of artillery. And indeed, this category does contain some pretty hardcore characters, as we will see. It also, though, includes one that is making a strong play for my new favorite occupational character class, because I never really quite realized what this was until I did a careful reread for the podcast. This is the Commando Mercenary, and in a category that is, it's supposed to be like the Revival. No flips, just fists, right? The Commando Mercenary is the most flaky, woo-woo, Steven Seagaliest commando you can possibly imagine. Let me just give you the background on this guy. Quote, "Starting with a background in the military, the character eventually became attracted to the martial arts, especially those that dealt with the mystic arts of invisibility. Eventually, the character turned into a specialist in commando operations requiring stealth as well as military prowess." Now, upon an initial read, what I got from that was, oh, this is like the Solid Snake, right? This is the character who is like the infiltrator military guy, like solo special forces, that kind of thing. But in fact, let's go step by step through what the Commando Mercenary gets, and you can see just how like weird and amazing this class is. First of all, you get to choose a martial art form from a limited list. You can choose hand-to-hand assassin if you want, the bullshit agent non-martial art martial art. But there's also a bunch of other options. There's drunken style, dog boxing, which is definitely fodder for a future episode, so we're not even going to go there. Monkey style kung fu, leopard style, which is like tiger style, only sleeker and more cool. Snake style, we've talked about before on the podcast, a very like sinister, chi-focused, like embracing the darkness style. Tian Su, which is also an evil style, full of evil masters, and teaches you Dim Mak, the death touch. I think if this character had a movie, it would definitely be called Death Touch, possibly with an exclamation point. So we're talking about martial arts. They have an ideology attached. They're focused on like stealth, in some cases deception, but all or most of them have this mystical bent. So it's like learning how to strangle people, but also Zen. Again, you cannot help but imagine this character as Steven Seagal. You get the basic military program, then you get to pick two more military programs, one general and one espionage. So obviously you've got your boot camp, right? Basic military training, but from there you get to branch out. Obviously you're going to take the War in the Shadows skill program. It's actually called that, for guerrilla military fighters. Going to do some black ops shit with this character, obviously. You get some ancient weapon proficiencies, as we talked about before, from some of the military programs. So if you're wondering, like, who goes through the military and comes out having really focused heavily on nunchucks, it's this guy. You get an espionage skill program, so you get a cover identity, and you get your sneaky spy skills. And then you get a general skill program, which you're probably going to take something cultural in nature to represent your esoteric studies that you've picked up in addition to your hardcore military training. And we're verging into page 55 here, but I don't even care. For social contacts, this character class keeps track of, it says, both sides of the war on terror. Well, it says the war on terrorism because there was no capital war on terror yet as of the writing of this book. They keep track of terrorist organizations, counter-terrorist forces, and the character, though, keeps a very low profile and has only a 2% chance of ever being recognized. So this is the guy who no one ever would suspect, the guy who is sort of like retired from the game, but then he knows who all the players are. We haven't talked very much about income in this game. Each character class lists an income that they can expect to make, depending on where they work, whether they work for an agency or as a freelancer or what. That's what made this character come together for me. Income. Base of $750 a week at an agency. $300 to $500 a week as an agent for a private investigation agency. Or about $200 a week as a laborer. This can only be interpreted as a sick burn on this character. In the year 2000, when this book was published, this is below the American federal minimum wage for a full-time job. So, despite this character's years of military experience, his spiritual enlightenment, his mystical chi powers, his connections, I mean, he's got a cover job that he can go to. But nonetheless, he's like a failing landscaper, or maybe he like is a sort of semi-out-of-work fitness consultant. Maybe he teaches underprivileged kids martial arts and tries to give them meaningful talks. He's that kind of guy. And that's what made this character come together for me. This guy is like the protagonist of the action movie that every action star makes when their career is waning, like when they've just passed the point of relevance, but Quentin Tarantino hasn't stretched out his angelic hand to them yet, where they're making movies where like they're starting to look like old men. And there's a movie about how they're like these enlightened badasses. And then they need to come back for one more time and like get involved in all this explosion machine gun bullshit, even though they're way past that. And they mostly spend their time out on their farm or as a truck driver or whatever. And because they're stealthy dudes, they get to spend the whole movie engaged in low impact murder, where you kind of creep around corners and snap people's necks and then spout off these little like fortune cookie nuggets of philosophy. Maybe I have a special ability to see this since I live in Northern California in a rural area full of people with questionable mental stability who have lots of bullshit Zen ideas and own a lot of guns, but I definitely know this guy. The flaky military maverick who's now obsessed with Eastern philosophy is such a cool, goofy stock character that I had no idea I was missing in my gaming until I ran across this class. It's the dumbest thing in the world. I mean, it's a goofy-ass character that I think would be so much fun to play. It is, in a good way, the dumbest thing on this page. I love that this guy exists. I'm glad he's scraping together $200 a week, calling himself a spiritual consultant, probably. I hope he manages to unload all those business cards he printed up. Join me next time when we discuss page 55 of Ninjas and Super Spies on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. New episodes drop every day, except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Ciambietta. This slightly annoying theme song is Cartoon Battle by Kevin MacLeod, whose work you can find at incompetech.com. The gong sound effect was recorded by Daniel Simon. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.